This week's episode of War Rock and Ajax is brought to you by Valiant Comics and the all-new Exo Manowar number 1 on sale in comic shops everywhere March 22nd. New York Times best-selling writer Matt Kent and rising star Tomas Giarello kick off a brand new beginning for Valiant's flagship character with a new ongoing series in part 1 of Soldier. A perfect jumping on point in the opening chapter of 2017's biggest new series. If you're looking for a place to start with Valiant Comics, this is it. We've read issue number 1, Chris and I. It is an excellent comic book. It is very different for what's been happening with Exo Manowar than in the regular series, but it ties into it. It brings in some cool battle stuff. It gets brutal in places. An excellent read. We'll be talking more about it in the weeks to come, about the amazing art, about the story. This week is your opportunity to pick up that number one issue. So please go get it. Exo Manowar number 1, out this week.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That's War Rocket Ajax. To bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, a joyous 316 to you.
Hell yeah, everyone.
What?
Hell yeah, everyone.
What?
A beer belly?
What?
A beer belly?
It should be noted that we are recording this on March 16th, which we celebrate every year as Austin 316, the greatest day of the year if you are into professional wrestler Stone Cold Steve Austin. But we did an entire thing on our 316th episode, so you don't have to worry about us going any further than that. Welcome to the show. Matt, how are you for real?
I'm good. If you check out my Twitter feed today, you'll see nothing but links to my Kickstarter, which I'll talk about in a minute, and gifts of Stone Cold Steve Austin. That was Twitter for me today.
He's a very gif-able man.
He sure is.
But you, everyone, you are in the future, so you don't need to worry about that. I hope you all had a wonderful celebration last week. Right now, what you need to be concerned with is our great episode today. Later on in the show, we are going to be talking to Leila Del Duca and Kit Seaton about Afar, their new graphic novel from Image Comics, which is fantastic. You should absolutely go pick it up. We've also got plenty of other fun and surprisements to get through. So, Matt, what do you say we just jump on into the show?
Let's do it. And let's start by thanking our supporters on Patreon. We do not have any new names to read this week, but Chris, these are people who have decided to help us out a little bit, all our Patreon supporters.
These are the folks who go over to patreon.com/warrocketajax. They say, hey, I want to do the right thing. I want to help Chris and Matt. I want to help out my guys who are here week in, week out, bringing that War Rocket Ajax heat. And they chip in as little as a dollar every month to help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. And folks, it was tax time this week.
If you would like to help us out on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/warrocketajax. As Chris said, kick in as little as a dollar. And you can get things like ad-free episodes of the show, art pieces that are exclusive to Patreon supporters. You get bonus audio if you're at certain levels. You get line-stepping privileges on the Every Story Ever and Panel President lists by doing that, and more stuff. So if that sounds like cool things to you, go help us out on Patreon if you can. All right, Chris, that's it for that. Let's do some checks and recs.
Let's do it.
Chris, what are you checking in with this week?
Well, Matt, I just have a follow-up, just a brief follow-up on a previous check from an earlier episode. You may recall, because you were here, before we left for Seattle at Emerald City Comic Con, I talked about how I had this weird desire to play Warcraft 3, Reign of Chaos, the real-time strategy game from Blizzard. which was out in like 2002. And I got it. Like, I got it while we recorded that episode, actually. And I've been playing it. And the nice thing about that is after I talked about it on the show, we actually had a couple of people show up on Twitter and be like, hey, you should get it. It's good. It's a good game. Like, you're not just remembering something that you goofed around with a lot in college and romanticized in your head. So I've been playing it. It's very fun, and it's very kind of calming and soothing, which I need in these days of deadlines, because I have been working on some stuff, Matt. So it's nice to kind of take a break and send a little ghost man running around the map for a little bit. That's what I've been up to lately. Matt, how about you? I'm guessing you got a big check this week.
Yeah, I got a lot going on. My book cover has been revealed on Comic Book Resources. I have had a lot going on. I reached a point where I have had so much going on that I tried to watch X-Men Apocalypse and stopped it about 30 minutes in and decided to go take a walk instead. But one big thing that's going on is I have launched a Kickstarter. As of Wednesday, March 15th, the Kickstarter for my new 5-issue comic project, Everything Will Be Okay, has been launched. That means it's going to go through April 14th, I believe. 13th or 14th. As of this recording, we are 21% funded at not quite 36 hours of being up and running, which is great. I cannot thank people who have supported the Kickstarter already enough. Probably by the time this goes up, hopefully we'll be in even better shape. But we've been doing really well so far. I've gotten a lot of tweets and retweets and sharing. I'm sure a lot of the people listening to this have backed already on Kickstarter, so thank you for that. If you haven't backed or you can't back, then just sharing the link to the Kickstarter is a huge help as well. I have been sharing it myself on Twitter, and some other people have too, so I really appreciate that. The idea of the book is, what if every disaster possible happened all at one time? And that happens. A lot of that happens in issue two. Issue one is about the lead characters on a space station after they have escaped a disaster-ridden Earth, and more stuff happens from there. The lead characters explore more things throughout the five issues and deal with even more catastrophe. That's the pitch I've been giving to people. You can go watch my video on Kickstarter where I am in. What I have made up my mom's basement to look like a fallout shelter, kind of, and I'm sort of playing that role of being in a fallout shelter. The creative team that I've assembled for the book is great. I've got Rodrigo Vargas, who has done some Patreon supporter art in the past, and is also just an amazing artist, is going to be doing the penciling for the series. Joe Hunter is doing colors. Joe Hunter, who you may know from Radical Guardian Skater X. With you, Chris, and Josh Kroc, who has lettered a bunch of our projects, Chris, is also lettering the book. So it's a great team, and I hope we get funded so we can put out those comics.
Yeah, and I have to say, if you're listening to War Rocket Ajax, you don't need both of us to recommend Matt's project to you. But as your pal, Matt, I have been privileged to see this book before and hear your ideas about it and talk to you about it. And it is, I am so excited for it right now. Like, I have been wanting to read this comic for a very long time. So I am really, really looking forward to seeing it all finished once the campaign is over.
Thank you very much, Chris. And I hope we get the privilege of making the comic if we're lucky enough to be funded. All right. Let's make some recommendations. Chris, what do you have to recommend?
My recommendation this week, again, is going to be pretty quick because it's something that we've both talked about pretty heavily on the show before, but now it is finally on Netflix, as we have wanted it to be for it seems like years, and that is Lucha Underground. It has finally hit Netflix, the first two seasons, I think, in their entirety. It's an interesting experience to watch Lucha Underground on Netflix to kind of like binge watch it, to just have, you know, two or three episodes on at a time. Even though, like, you and I will do that with like old pay-per-views or old Nitros on the WWE Network.
Yeah.
Like whenever. Like, we did that while we were in Seattle. But having it available, something that's so current, and seeing it develop is really interesting. If you are curious about professional wrestling, if you like the stuff that Matt and I talk about on the show and you think it sounds interesting and you'd like to check it out, I feel like Lucha Underground is probably the most comic booky wrestling that is widely available right now. With all due respect to Chikara, which is 1,000,000% comic booky. Lucha Underground will kind of instantly engage you, I think. And there's great wrestling, there's great wrestlers on there, there's really good storytelling. A couple things, though. Looking back on it as someone who was, like, super thrilled to see it when it was first coming out and watching it that way, Matt Stryker's really bad. I'm sorry. Like, I kind of defended that dude a lot as being, like, you know, not that bad, but he is. He's bad. And two, it is so weird to see that show at the start when the plots are like, oh, Dario Cueto has, you know, is going to give away $100,000 of his own money to whoever he determines is the best wrestler, or got like, oh, Chavo Guerrero is turning his back on luchador traditions, when what that show is going to become is Mil Muertes seated on a throne of skulls, lording over the arena with the powers of the damned.
And they explain, like, the disappearance of certain characters as being that they were killed by Mil Muertes' henchmen and made into that throne of skulls.
Yes. Yeah, like wrestlers that were on the show that will no longer be on the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I watched, I think, the first two or three episodes today, and I was like, man, remember before we knew about Pentagon Jr.? Remember, like, before he showed up and we were like, oh, okay.
Remember when we thought Drago was just a guy in a dragon costume and not a shoot dragon?
Yes, I do. So what I'm saying is you should all check out Lucha Underground. Of all the wrestling shows I can imagine, I feel like it's the one that is most suited for the traditional Netflix model, because it does have a, like, it is produced like a TV show and not necessarily like a wrestling show, especially in that first season before they kind of get into the pattern of waiting for Ultima Luchas to roll around to settle all the big feuds. So give it a shot if you want. We've talked about it on the show before, but it holds up. It's good. Matt, what is your recommendation this week?
My recommendation is a movie that is currently in theaters, which is not something we always talk about on the show. It is the movie Get Out, which you've probably heard of. You've probably heard about. It is Jordan Peele's written and directed horror movie that has recently broken the $100 million mark. Mazel tov. It's Jordan Peele for that. But it is great. It deserves all the credit and the praise that it has gotten since it's being released. I came back and I tweeted about it, and I just tweeted, first, Get Out is a very good movie, and then just marveled at how tight that script is, and how one day I would love to be able to bang out a script that is that tight and where things connected together so well. Because so much that is set up in the first act of that movie pays off in the third act. The second act doesn't drag. In fact, it is very intriguing. And Chris, I know you don't tend to like horror movies. This, while it hits the beats of a horror movie very, very much in very many ways, it isn't gory and cringy like so many horror movies are. It's a more psychological type of horror, and I think that the idea is that, you know, because the premise of the movie is the lead character, whose name is Chris, he's a black man who is dating a white woman, and they're going to meet her family, who live, you know, off in the suburbs somewhere in a huge house. And then when they get there, it turns out there's this big party happening with, you know, a huge number of white people showing up at the house, and there's maybe one or two black people there. And it's all just a very weird situation. He feels weird about it. And it just kind of takes that fear of, like, being surrounded by these people that you think hate you, or you kind of, you know, you kind of have been trained by the world around you to think hate you. And then maybe taking that to the extreme, or taking that just like one step further into, you know, what you could imagine might happen. It's really clever. It's really well done. The twist that comes makes a ton of sense. Like, it goes into, I'll just say it goes into like weird sci-fi territory, but it makes all kinds of sense in the scenario. And the way that it's set up at the beginning of the movie is super clever. I don't have anything but good things to say about it. All the performances are good. I really dug it. I really dug this movie. I feel like we're in a time right now where, like, every year we're getting like at least two or three really good horror movies every year. And this is the first of 2017's. So if you haven't seen Get Out, I would absolutely recommend going to see it. It is so smart. So good. All right, Chris, those are our checks and recs. Let's talk about some comics.
Oh, good. I love those.
We're going full bat this week. Full bat.
All bat.
Starting with All-Star Batman, number 8.
Which, by the way, people are going to think is me, but it just happens that, like, the three comics we read and wanted to talk about are just three Batman comics, because that's what's up.
Yeah.
That's what's up in our lives. That's the lives we lead.
It's true. That is what's up. I think you may have even mentioned this earlier in an earlier episode, but there's a part in All-Star Batman number 8 where Batman is confronted by imposter Nightwing Batwoman and Red Hood, and mm-hmm. he identifies them as imposters because of the mistakes they make, and he ends that scene by saying, "My family knows how to fucking fight."
We got an early preview of this at Comics Alliance, and so I thought it was out a couple weeks ago. And so when I realized the whole issue was out this week, and subsequently realized I had not read the whole issue, it was the first thing I jumped on. And yeah, that's maybe my favorite moment in comics of the year so far. Cousin Batman. Who knew? Who knew Cousin Batman was going to be so great?
There's something about the Scott Snyder doing the cussin' Batman that makes it really work.
Because it's such good cussin'. It's only like I wonder if that's because that's what All-Star Batman does. Because I know that Snyder was a little nervous about calling the book All-Star Batman. Because you know if. It would be in the shadow of another book that is called All-Star Batman and Robin the Boy Wonder that never finished. But, like, I wonder if that's, like, his joke to himself, because this is not the first time we've had Cousin Batman in this book. Fucking cussing, truck driving, his ears are secretly knives. Yeah. Like shit-talking, dude-fighting Batman is, oh god, that is a Batman I love. That is a Batman I want in my life.
I also want to talk about the art in this issue, which is by Giuseppe Comunicoli, who I actually talked about his art being so much better now than it was just even a few years ago in Amazing Spider-Man, and that shows even more in this Batman issue. There are certain dramatic reveals in this All-Star Batman issue that are so well played and so well staged that I have a whole new respect for Giuseppe Comunicoli as an artist. I never thought he was bad, but I always, you know, there was a time when he was doing Spider-Man stuff where I was kind of like, you know, he's good. He's a workman. He's a workman.
He's a Dan Jurgens. You know, he's an Al Milgram. No offense, Al.
But there are panels and pages in this issue where, like, there's a real panache to his art. Like, he's got a style all his own. And I think it looks great. Like, it holds up to the Francesco Francavilla art that's in the backup.
He is the guy that I would have picked as being the sort of the odd man out in what is a legit murderer's row of talent. Like, it's Declan Shalvey, it's Francesco Francavilla, it's Afua Richardson, it's John Romita Jr. It's like Jock, you know? It's such amazing talent on that book. And then you see Giuseppe Chiavenacoli, and you're like, oh yeah, I mean, he's good. And then he does this issue and really just knocks it out of the park. Like, in a way where it's like, oh, I guess we have to reevaluate that guy. Who, again, never thought he was bad, did not realize he was this good.
This issue leads me to talk about the issue of the regular Batman series, number 19, that came out this week. This is the fourth part in the Tom King I Am Bane storyline. And there's some parts of All-Star Batman where it kind of does that thing where, you know, Batman has to take on, if not a bunch of his villains all at once, like projections of a bunch of his villains, or imagined versions of a bunch of his villains, or simulacrums of his villains all at once. And what this Bane story does is it kind of flips the script, where it's Bane who is going through a bunch of Batman villains to get to Batman. And it's got that kind of weird progression where, like, Bane is basically saying, no, I'm the guy. I'm the guy who's going to get to Batman, and no, none of you are going to stop me. Whether it's you know, Scarecrow or Two-Face, or there's a part in here with Bane and Riddler. So it sort of puts the Batman shoes on Bane throughout the issue, which I think is super clever.
Okay, real quick, I just want to talk about these Batman shoes. Please tell me more.
Well, Bane wears Batman shoes.
I'm in.
And he meets Calendar Man.
Oh, okay, yeah, all right. I'm definitely in.
Yeah. There's a funny part with Solomon Grundy and Amygdala.
Amygdala! I'm glad to see that guy back.
Yeah, Amygdala's hanging out.
Glad to see him getting some work.
And, you know, as I think we've said about this Batman series, because David Finch has been doing the art in it for the most part, I feel like David Finch is really stepping up on these Batman issues. Because David Finch was, for a long time, a guy where I was kind of like, okay, David Finch. But I think he's doing good work on this Batman series. Some of his best work.
I think we were both very cool on Finch when in the New 52 relaunch when he was doing Batman. And I gotta say, like, I interviewed Finch forever, I guess back in, what, 2011, 2012, whenever the New 52 started. And talking to him, like, I wanted him to do well, but I've never been a real fan of his art. But again, it's one of those things where I love, Mikhail Janin, and think he's great, but Dave Finch is kind of stepping up and really making me enjoy his art as well. So a lot of artist level ups in this week's comics.
I will also say, for a little personal story, Dave Finch is one of the first comic creators that ever sent me a nice note.
Really?
Yeah. Way back when. And I am glad that these columns are not online anymore. I wrote a column for a website called Broken Frontier about how I was going to be an up-and-coming comic creator. And I think I wrote a column about how, like, spite led me to do so many things. Or how I was going to let spite drive me to keep trying, even as I got rejected. And David Finch sent me a note that was like, yeah, keep going. Let that spite fuel you. So, heads up, you know, salute to David Finch. He's a good guy.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. All right, the last comic we're going to talk about this week is Batwoman #1. Now, we talked about the Rebirth issue when it came out. This is the same creative team, We've got Marguerite Bennett writing with James Tynion IV, co-writing, and Steve Epting on the art. But as far as the story goes, this issue's pretty different. Because the Rebirth issue jumped around in time, told a little bit of the Batwoman backstory, some of her origin stuff, and some of the stuff about how she ended up becoming Batwoman and meeting Batman and all that kind of stuff. This is a straight-up spy story. This is a spy story with Monster Bane.
Yeah, this shit feels like Casino Royale.
Yeah.
It's got the cold open, it's got, like, flashback stuff in it, and, I mean, we talked about artist level ups. There is no artist level up here, because I don't think Steve Epting can get better. Like, you're familiar with his work, I assume. He's very, very good at drawing comic books.
And he remains good at drawing comic books in this. I will say, there. Speaking of Casino Royale and how I've seen several people compare this Batwoman book to James Bond, there's a part where Batwoman, Kate Kane, straight up just asks her assistant, companion, butler?
That's Julia Pennyworth.
Yeah, yeah. She asks Julia Pennyworth, "Are you my Q?" Like, that's... Like, it's not hiding it.
Yeah, yeah. I really love this issue. I mean, one of the things we talked about when we talked about the Zero issue, and that we've talked about with discussions of Batwoman on our panel president list, is that she has her own visual signifiers that are, you know, kind of inherently tied to J.H. Williams III, but that have become less tied to his artistic style and more tied to Kate Kane as a character. And the way that Epting does it in this issue is that they are the normal, like, timeline, like the normal superhero action stuff, is more or less drawn in his usual style, like the same kind of style that you would have seen on Captain America or Velvet. But this stuff, like the flashback stuff, is kind of done in that stark black, white, and red sort of J.H. Williams-y style, and I love that effect because I love the visual language of comics and how you can have something where you don't need to be told this is years ago. Even if there's a caption there, you don't necessarily need it because you're getting that visual in how it's presented. And I really love how that works out here.
With that, we should give a nod to the colorist Jeremy Cox, who is...
Yes.
Who is presenting a lot of that visual language. I mean, Epting changes up his style a little bit for those flashbacks, but it's really all in the color. And Jeremy Cox does an amazing job of not only those flashback sequences, but also making, you know, giving Batwoman her in the present day all her visual effects, like her very pale skin. So, great color work from Jeremy Cox on this for sure.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of this entire team. Tynion's been just like maybe one of the best up and comers in comics. I don't know if anybody had a better breakout year in 2016 than he did. And then like Marguerite Bennett is somebody that I think had like a huge breakout year in 2015. So getting them together on this book and watching them tell this very compelling superhero spy action story. Because, you know, we say it's Casino Royale, but it's still got Monster Man Venom in it. So love it. I love this book.
All right, Chris, and that's going to do it for our comic segment. Before we talk to our guests, Layla Del Duca and Kit Seaton, let's talk a little bit about Loot Crate.
Now, Loot Crate, what is that again? We didn't talk about it at the top of the show, so I'm not really sure what it is.
Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service. They take 4 to 6 really cool items, right? Like stuff that you can't just go get at Toys R Us or you know, whatever store, like whatever local store. These are exclusive items that you're only going to get through them. And it always includes a t-shirt and a pin. You might call this stuff loot, right? They take that stuff and they put it in a box. Now, usually it's a cardboard box, but if you want to use a loose definition of crate, you might call that box a crate. Then they seal it up, they put your address on it, and they ship it to you. Every month. They ship one to you every month if you subscribe. You just get that cool stuff. You pay them less than $20 a month, they send you that cool stuff.
Now, Matt, can I ask you a little bit of an awkward question? Because, again, like, I have the attention span of a goldfish, so
I can't
really remember a lot of the details. This is called Loot Crate.
Yes.
Now, loot, as I understand it from a Batman comics, is, I mean, that's commonly a word used to refer to hot merchandise, let's be real here. Stolen merchandise.
These are not stolen goods. Loot Crate legally acquires these items from the manufacturers who make them, and then they provide the items to you, the subscriber, every month in a box, which you might refer to as a crate.
Okay, well, now that's, I'm really confused, because I thought if they were like stolen items, that would explain how they could give you these exclusive pop culture items featuring franchises that you love, that I love, that everybody loves, for less than $20 a month. Plus, you get $3 off with the coupon code. This, like, how is this all above board?
I don't know. Volume?
I don't know. That makes sense.
I don't know how Loot Crate's coming out on this deal, to be honest with you.
I mean, I would say people should probably take advantage of it, because it doesn't seem like... I feel like they don't know what they're giving you for this low, low price.
While you still can, while they are still crunching the numbers, go to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax. Enter the coupon code WarRocketAjax and get this. You can get $3 off your subscription. Pay even less for that first box. Like, I mean, I don't know how they're pulling down a profit on this, guys, but get $3 off. Once again, go to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax. Use the coupon code WarRocketAjax. Get that stuff for basically a steal. Get that loot.
Get that loot.
And now, Chris, let's talk to Layla and Kit.
Joining us for the program this week, we are pleased as punch to welcome back an old friend of the show who has brought a new friend of the show with her to talk to us. They are the creators behind the graphic novel Afar, coming out from Image Comics. Layla Del Duca and Kit Seaton are here. Welcome to the show. It is so great to have you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back, and I'm really happy to have Kit with me.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. First time.
It's a weird show. We basically are trying to bring the Japanese game show to podcasts.
Well,
that's not true.
it's some ridiculous stuff you guys pull on the show, and it's fun.
Okay, let's do it.
we're here to talk about your comic, which looks amazing. The two of you were nice enough to send over a copy for Matt and I to read, and I have to say, it is beautiful. For one thing, it looks amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Kit's artwork is incredible. I'm so glad that her work is reaching a wider audience finally, because I've been a fan of hers for... how long have we known each other? Like 7 or 8 years now?
Yeah, I think about 7 or 8.
Yeah, and I've just always been amazed by how... people don't know who she is yet, because I've just been always amazed. So I'm really happy that everybody's response has been amazing so far regarding Kit's artwork. So yes, rooting for you, Kit.
Yay, thank you.
So, well, I guess that brings me to the question, like, are you two friends through comics, or is it from something else?
Well, we're actually friends through college, kind of. We both attended the same art school, the Rocky Mountain College of Art and Design, and I started seeing Kit's artwork in the hallways and kind of like jealously shaking my fist at this wonderful competitor whose stuff always looked beautiful. And I don't think we actually met until after I graduated, because you were a year behind me, right, Kit?
Yeah, I think a year or two, yeah. But you were always, I don't know, you started, you were around and then you were around all the time, but you were always, like, you were always busy. And that was one thing that I always thought was something that was kind of cool about you, is that you were always just, like, working on a project and always had something kind of going on. But when we did see you, like, you were there and you're like, this is the thing I'm working on. And then you'd be gone and then you'd be back, like, I'm working on another thing. And
yeah, that's so funny. Yeah, another thing about our relationship that I don't really remember because it's so long ago. But Kit was actually reminding me that how we became friends was she was an adjunct faculty instructor at REMCAD after she graduated, and I think after we had gone to Denver drink and draw together a couple times, she asked me if I wanted to sub for her class, and I said yes. And then shortly after that, I think we were hanging out, and I was like, we should be friends, or something. Yeah. Is that how it happened?
It was something like, it was like, I don't know, it was like a playground moment where you just turn to another kid and like, we're friends now. And he's like, well, I'm not going to argue with that. And yeah, I think that ever since then we've been pals. And, but mostly, yeah, I think we've always just kind of liked each other and liked hanging out. And so this just sort of seemed like an excuse just to hang out more, even though now we live on opposite sides of the country. So this facilitated that, which has been great. It's always fun.
Yeah. Agreed.
So did you ever have to have that moment where you were like, hey, I was so angry at you when we were in school because your art was so good? Or did that never happen?
I think it was friendly competition.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, it was always like a little bit of healthy camaraderie, a little bit of envy. But yeah, of course, you always just like, oh, I wish I had what that other person had. And,
yeah.
You know. But I think we also admired that. Yeah.
Your friendship, the simpatico brains kind of really shines through in the book. Mm-hmm. Because, Layla, I get the sense that you... Because this is your first published comic as a writer, yes?
Well, it's my first published long-form thing. I did a couple short stories, or wrote a couple short stories.
Okay.
Before.
It feels like you really challenged yourself with this.
Yes.
Because in the description of the story, the sort of summary in the back matter... the first five words are in a post-industrial desert wasteland, which is as a reader something that you realize as you're reading the comic that is not necessarily apparent to you at the beginning. You don't think when you start this, oh, this is the future. Then cyborgs show up, and you're like, wait a minute.
Oh, good. I'm glad it was a mental, like, whoa for you.
Yeah, it definitely was, because it's one of those things, you know, like Star Wars, people describe Star Wars as a distant past that feels like the future. Mm-hmm. This is a future that feels like the past in a lot of ways.
Nice.
What led you to that setting rather than just, you know, a setting in the past in this story that leans on, you know, a culture that seems to, you know, really involve itself in fable and myth and folk way?
Well, I was initially really inspired by, Kit's artwork for one, and kind of thinking about what I wanted her to draw. And something that I want to see more of in comics is more African influence. And so I initially wanted this to be like a historical sci-fi, so that the story really did take place on Earth in like pre-colonial Ethiopia. But when I started researching everything, I couldn't find enough information, and so I quickly learned that if I was to do a historical science fiction story this way, that I would fail miserably, and so I turned it into sci-fi, so then it could be greatly influenced by these cultures, but wouldn't be appropriating it in a tasteless way that I'm doing injustice to it. So I want it to be more homage than anything. But that's kind of how that developed. Like the post-industrial desert wasteland bit came later. And the story was initially pitched, I believe, as like a historical science fiction fantasy. Yeah.
And Kit, I know that you know, in some of your work, like you have a webcomic. I think you would call it a webcomic.
I have like a couple of webcomics kind of floating around, but the one that I'm still kind of puttering around on is a series that I'm working on with my sister, Kat Seaton, called Norroway, which is where we take an old Scottish fairy tale, the Black Wolf of Norroway, and we try to expand it out and explore character development. And it's also the same kind of thing. It's young adult that's sort of seen through the lens of this kind of stubborn peasant girl and her sort of self-discovery and an awakening on this journey with a mythical spouse, bull creature. And it's kind of delving into fantastical themes, but also themes that deal with, you know, the psychological growth of characters, particularly geared towards a young adult, is something that is of great interest to me as an artist. So when Layla pitched this, I was very excited.
Afar is rooted in a sort of African cultural storytelling tradition. And the Black Bull of Norway is, you know, based, as you said, on that Scottish fairy tale. But it's kind of shocking and surprising how much they share, including and up to, if not humanoid animals, which there are some of in Afar, certainly anthropomorphized animals who can talk.
Right? Yeah, some of them have very, like, you know, aggravating personalities. Yeah, that there are some parallels. Like, both of the young heroines fall out of trees.
After I wrote that, I'm like, way to copy Kit and Kat.
I love this. I'm going to start every book with a main character falling out of a tree now.
Good. It'll be your thing. It'll be known as the artist.
My calling card.
It's a great start. It establishes a question in the reader's mind right away. Why did they fall out of that tree?
That's right. Where were they up there? Bird's eggs, drawing constellations, you know, any number of things.
But I guess what I'm trying to get at is what the appeal is, why maybe you're necessarily drawn to those kinds of stories with those kinds of creatures, those kinds of characters that sort of fall into that fairy tale or fable genre category.
I think, yeah, for me, well, I think a lot of it has to do with the media that I was consuming when I was young. You know, I was born in 1981, so like right around that time, all those great, you know, Jim Henson movies came out, The Dark Crystal, The Labyrinth, and I grew up on reading Madeline L'Engle's Wrinkle in Time series. And then when my sister was born, she was born in 1989, and suddenly then there was this moment where I'm like, I'm going to share all of my fabulous fantasy media from the 80s with my sister. And so she takes that a little bit further, and she develops her own kind of interest in folklore, and then she comes back with all this sort of material that we then share. So, you know, just for, you know, growing up, we were just a bunch of really awkward nerds, so it just made sense that we just proliferate this material with each other. And I think I'm just still carrying that on into adulthood. It's just arrested development.
I would say I'm this, like, pretty much the same with Kit, but my influences were mainly Star Trek and Star Wars, but both of those had a ton of, like, humanoids and talking animal-ish creatures, and I just always loved that, because I liked that kind of visual diversity, and I felt like it was a great platform to study social stuff and seek out new civilizations to boldly go where no man has gone before, so...
You get it. Good job.
What? Man, that is interestingly phrased. It's almost like that came from somewhere.
I know, but it was so original. So original.
Yeah, right off the dome. I want to ask this. But, well, before I ask this, I have more questions about what happens in Afar, but I don't want to give too much away at the same time. So before I start digging into to more of what is happening in the book, I would love to hear, you know, aside from those five words in a post-industrial desert wasteland, I would love to hear the two of you just give your pitch to, like, a potential reader about what this graphic novel is about.
Okay.
And then we can work from there, because I don't want to spoil anything.
Okay. Well, I'll go first then. Wait, do you want two separate pitches from both of us?
Well, you can tag team it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll start.
Okay. First off, thoughts.
Right. well, I was going to say that Afar is about Batema, a 15-year-old girl who suddenly starts astrally projecting to other planets when she sleeps, and it's about her navigating her new abilities while also dealing with her life at home, which is pretty tumultuous because her parents go off to be salt shepherds so that they can make a living to send back to their kids. Batema has a younger brother named Inotu who has a penchant for trouble, and their journey really kind of takes off when Inotu gets in trouble with a cyborg bodyguard, and they are forced to flee across a desert while learning how to grow up together.
Something like that. And it's got some pretty crazy creatures in it. It's pretty psychedelic. Every time she astrally projects into a new creature's body, she's given no context, so the audience knows, you know, just about as much as she does. So we're learning about this story through the lens of this 15-year-old girl who's trying to figure out her own identity and kind of claim some independence away from her family while still also acknowledging that her brother is important in her life. And Inotu, likewise, wants very much to be an engineer and wants to get there. But he's an awkward, geeky kind of kid who still hasn't kind of grown into his feet yet. So they kind of have to help each other out.
Okay, so what I wasn't sure if you wanted me to give away or not was about the projection stuff, the astral projection stuff where
yeah. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Where, you know, Batema is going to sleep and dreaming and thinking that she's just experiencing dreams, but comes to realize, nope, I'm actually going into the bodies of these, you know, these other life forms on other planets who are humanoid but also animal-like. That is a wild concept. That is
thank you.
That is such a cool, like, hook high concept. At what point did you decide, nope, these are not dreams, and these aren't just, like, fantasy sequences? These are real things that are happening to our lead character. Was that the idea from the get-go, or did that kind of evolve?
It was the idea from the get-go. As a young girl, I was really bored and lonely living out in the middle of nowhere in Montana. And I would often have these grandiose imagination adventures where, like, anything was possible. And I always loved the kind of books that transported me to other worlds or just other situations that are far more exciting. So when I came up with this idea of astral projection and stuff, that was always the idea, so that Batema could go have adventures on other planets. And that just, like, seemed like this great visual playground to make Kit draw, and then also to fulfill my need to kind of go on those kinds of explorations. And I thought that it would, like, if I was writing for me at the age that I wanted to read this at, then I think I would have loved that. And I guess that's how that came about.
Yeah, I think I really loved working on it too for that reason. And just me being, you know, a kid who, I think when I was 4 or 5, I'd watched The Last Unicorn, saw it once, and was convinced, like, that's it, I'm a unicorn now. And it was embarrassing for my parents when we would walk into public restaurants. because I would insist on acting it out. And people would say, well, do you want us to put your horse up in the stable? And I'm like, you know, of course, that was rewarding for me as, you know, when I was four. But yeah, I think there is this sort of sense of this sort of escapism of fantasy and science fiction, and getting to kind of escape from the frustrations of being, you know, just childhood and being a young adult in general, and just not understanding the world that you're in and not having the ways to kind of explain or describe what's going on with you, or you don't understand how to kind of get the results that you want out of life. So, you know, why not, you know, have some flight of fancy or be something else for a little while? So, yeah, that was really appealing to me too as a kid.
All that said, you know, as cool and appealing as the idea of transporting to another world, another life, another body temporarily, as you're dreaming is, it's also terrifying. It's also like, hold on, I'm not me. And I feel like that comes through in this as well. Like in some of her early excursions, Batema is so confused and so uncertain of what's happening to her. And I think the both of you really pulled off, you know, showing both sides of the coin of how cool that could be, and also how just disorienting and weird and unsettling it could be at the same time.
Well, thanks. I thought it was important to show that even though, like, reading about really cool adventures is so fun, the actual reality of it isn't. So I wanted to make sure that we had that in there, because it would be freaking terrifying. Like, I would love to explore other planets, but that would also be like one of the most jarring, terrifying experiences that I could imagine having.
So Layla, last time you were here, to talk about Cheddar, that you worked on with Joe Keating, and you were here as an artist. And we've already talked a little bit about this being one of your first, like, long-form writing credits. What is that transition like for you? Like, do you find yourself being like, well, look, I wouldn't want to draw this, but if I put it in this script, we're good.
Oh, man. Well, I definitely didn't write anything into the script that I wouldn't want to draw myself, because I feel like it'd be kind of cruel to do that. So I hope that it wasn't too hard in places. And I do remember... Well, like in Shutter scripts, with really hard pages, Joe always writes an apology. He's like, I'm so sorry, Layla, this is going to be hard, or whatever. And I hope that I did that for Kit, and I hope that you understand that I didn't mean to. It was really hard, and I'm sorry.
You were always very apologetic. It was a little, it was always a little too apologetic. It was like, it's fine, I'll figure it out. Like, grown up pants on, I'll do it.
Good, awesome. Well, you picked ass at it. But going from being an artist to a writer for me was really terrifying, because I don't have the writing skills yet, or like I do now after I wrote Afar. I feel leaps and bounds better than I was at the beginning of writing this. But I knew it was going to be a really challenging skill set to gain, so I made sure to hire an editor. And I hired Tanika Stoats because she's amazing, and I met her at Emerald City Comic Con, I think, 2 or 3 years ago, and was just instantly charmed by her, and I heard that she was an editor, and so I hired her on, and immediately she started giving me amazing feedback. The first issue was a piece of crap, to be honest, and she gave me so many good tips about what to do and what not to do, and like, why certain character developments were failing and where the story wasn't developing like it should. And so she ripped it apart in the best way possible, and like the best way that I improve, which is really honest feedback followed by potential solutions. And it was really terrifying, but I felt so much stronger having her at my side. And she really taught me a lot. And by the end of the book, I could tell that I had improved a lot, because she was giving fewer and fewer change notes as the book went on. And so I feel like my anxiety level was consistent through the whole book, but I feel like my skills definitely improved.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, I had a lot of confidence in you, so, but I'm glad you heard that. Because I met Tanika, and she's everything that Layla says. She's this incredibly knowledgeable, resourceful font of information, but she delivers it in such, with a lot of empathy, but she's also very precise, and it was wonderful to see her work with some students of mine. She's really, can't praise her enough. She's wonderful.
That's really awesome. It also kind of reveals me as the terrible person I am, because I'd be like, yeah, like spaceship battles, page one. Let's do this. There's a huge crowd in the middle of New York City looking up at spaceship battles, and the spaceships look like bicycles.
Oh my god, I would never work with you. I would never. I would be like, I have to break the contract, so I can't draw this. I'm sorry.
Well, can it be tricycles? I mean,
yeah. What about unicycles? That could be okay.
Yeah. Or maybe just tires.
Just big space tires.
That's it. Big space tires.
Beautiful.
Well, the design element of this book that at least to me really sticks out as, you know, unique to this book and super cool is all the different creatures. Botema ends up, inhabiting, leaping into, you might say, and you know, some of them are more humanoid than others, and some of them are almost insectoid, and then you've got, you know, kind of just the animals that populate the world that aren't exactly like Earth animals. They're a little different. Like there's one that's called a lizard dog, which is exactly what it sounds like. And then you've got these four-eyed tiger creatures, and there's just, you know, I guess I'm curious, like, how much of that was just, like, Layla stuff that you described in the script, or Kit, like, designs that you came to Layla with at the beginning, or if you, since both of you are artists, if they're things that you collaborated on together in design, or how are these creatures born?
Ooh, well, I think it kind of overlaps a little bit, because I think I asked Kit a few times what would be interesting to her to draw, but I can't remember specifically which ones, but I also do remember being a little bit more specific with, this is a muscly snake guy.
You had a list. You were like, I want like cat people. I want like I want angler mer creatures with like reverse inverted like light absorbing black holes for antennae. I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
you have like a wish list that you had to get out of your system, and then it's like, okay, would you like to draw?
Yeah, I think I ran out of ideas, and also I was like, cool, crap, but now that I kind of barreled through this initial list of creatures that I thought would be cool for Kit to draw, maybe she should choose which ones now. So yeah, I think towards the end I started asking you what would be more interesting, but yeah, I think again my novice writing skills made me, or had me like dictate to you the first.
I thought it was really cool that you had a wish list, you know, because I felt like, you know, I would be getting these like little daily drawing challenges from you. It's actually really kind of fun sometimes to have a prompt, something to work with. You know, you set some limitations and you see what you can do within those limitations. And I think what I really actually enjoyed about this book was how, you know, collaborative it was. It actually was really fun to have Layla's perspective as an artist on the book, and she never tried to kind of take over the reins of the art or anything like that. She was always very encouraging, and because sometimes, like, if I just wasn't quite getting the angle right or couldn't quite figure out, usually it would be architecture. That was my strongest suit. Layla would sometimes have a solution for that, so it was really great. Like if I was stuck, you know, she could help me. Unfortunately, I really couldn't help her as much with writing. I'm more so a novice with writing than she is. In fact, I, part of the benefit of being an artist, like, I can work with writers that I want to work with. So I, in that regard, probably wasn't nearly as helpful as she was helpful to me. I mean, she'd send me scripts, and I'd be like, this is great! And you'd be like,
Well, I hope you know how encouraging that was. Like, I've already told you how insecure I've been through this whole project, but you've always been like, Layla, you're doing fine, you're doing great, I love drawing this. And anytime that you had an issue that I also can't remember specifically if you did or not, you would say, you would tell me. I really love that about our relationship. Like, I feel like we can call each other out if we don't understand something or if something's not working well. So yeah, I really love that about our collaboration, for sure.
Yay!
Yay!
So were all the designs, like, entirely Kit?
I would say I gave her a couple visual, like, starting points for a few. Like, the eight-legged cat creatures, I had an initial sketch for them, but she vastly, greatly improved it, which that sketch is actually in the final trade paperback in the back. And then towards the end, we were reaching crunch time, so I would do some layouts, but again, like, they were so vague that Kit just, like, took them off in this wonderful direction that I never, that was, like, way better than I suggested to her. So I think I just, like, gave her here and there, really not very much at all.
Just, like, notes about composition and occasionally panel layouts. Like, kind of getting down to, like, the last month or so, we were trying to crank out as many pages as possible, and I knew I wanted to get the book basically done in August, since my teaching schedule is very, very busy. So we had to have just that extra time to kind of get things done. And Layla actually did kind of do some double duty as an assistant, too. So she helped me out with some of the watercolor washes towards the end. It really is a collaborative effort.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, I was going to jump to talking a little bit about the way this is published, because we recently had someone else who is publishing some all-ages material through Image, and they're coming out as original graphic novels as well. That was Greg Schiegel. And we talked to him a little bit about, you know, just the book market versus the direct market and that kind of stuff, and you know, there's a sense in Afar that even though it's being published as a graphic novel, it's certainly broken down into chapters, broken down into parts that you could possibly describe as issues. Is it hard to break out of that sort of comics as issues structure, or did you approach this like straight on as like 168 page graphic novel, I'm going to put it all together? Or did you have to, in your own mind as writer and artist, have to sort of, you know, break it up into those chapters to make it more digestible?
Well, I'm actually glad you brought this up, because we pitched this book and we started writing it as a monthly comic book. And I think after writing the first issue, it became evident to me that it wasn't a strong enough first issue to grab people's attentions, because I'm so new and I didn't know what I was doing. So when I noticed this, I brought it up to Eric and Corey at Image Comics, and I was like, "Hey, is there any chance you would be willing to publish this as a graphic novel? Because I think it would work stronger this way." And I think they were really for it from the get-go, because I think they were lining up these other two books. I think it was Pix and Kid Savage.
Kid Savage, yeah.
Yeah, and I think they're like, this would be great as part of this new line that we're, thing we're trying to do. So we ended up combining issue one and two into chapter one, and so that's kind of what happened. And then after the second, so, like, when I started writing what is chapter two, that's when I was like, oh, okay, so I'm writing a graphic novel now. I'm not, I don't have to adhere to the single issue rules and that kind of stuff. And so that's, if the book feels a little bit off, I think it's probably because of that. Because I wasn't writing this initially as a graphic novel structure. I was writing it as a single issue structure.
I think it's interesting that you say that, because when we talked to Greg, you know, he said basically, that is the way that all ages comics are approached now, from that original graphic novel, get these into bookstores kind of approach. Do you think that the book is remarkably different than it would be if you had continued writing it as issues?
I think it is. I think it's stronger for it. I think it's stronger as a graphic novel than it is a single issue comic series. I'm not entirely a huge fan of like the shorter 22 page single issues with a cliffhanger at every 22 pages. I think it works really great for single issues, but I'm personally not that into reading single issue comics. I love being able to immerse myself in a graphic novel for a longer period of time. I don't like the jarring cutoff at the end of each issue, which is also another reason why I'm a trade waiter. Sorry, everyone. yeah, but I think if I knew that I could do this as a graphic novel, the book would be vastly different. And I do think the book is stronger since I was able to write it as a graphic novel after the first chapter.
And I did notice that when we were talking to people at last Emerald City Comic Con back in 2016. It did appeal to a lot of people who are like, oh, I can binge read. And, you know, yeah, I'm kind of much the same way. I want to be able to sit and read something till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning because I don't sleep.
yeah.
Well, Kit, coming from, you know, doing some web comics, those are stories that you can just keep going and going and going for as long as you want, page by page.
it is interesting, yeah, but you're right. It is, webcomics do kind of the sense that they can be ongoing and go on forever, but the funny thing about all of the web series that I'm working on is that I do actually really want them to come to an end. and it's been interesting having since worked on this book and being able to hold something finished and complete in my hands, how much more meaningful done and saying something is final and finished and complete really means to me as an artist. So I'm hoping to have more opportunities to tie off some loose ends and bring things to their conclusion. So we're definitely looking at, Kat and I are looking at some of those possibilities for Norway as well.
That is fantastic to hear. I'm glad you are doing such amazing work on this book. It really is a gorgeous and stunning read. Like Matt said, you think you know what's going on, then they're cyborgs. And that's my favorite kind of story.
Awesome. Thank you.
But I think now is the time of the show where we like to turn the questions over to our listeners on Twitter. Matt, if our listeners want to get in on these little talks that we have each and every week here on War Rocket Ajax, how can they go about that?
Well, Chris, it's so simple. The process is so simple. Settle in for a long, long rest. Get in your bed, get all snuggled up, lay your head on your pillow, fall asleep. Then find yourself in the body of a crab person. Your hands are claws. What is happening? You've metamorphosed into a whole other creature. What is this existence? Who brought this upon you? What unmerciful god has changed you in such a way? Then wake up, back in your normal body, and sign up for an account on Twitter.com. Wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6:30 Pacific. And follow the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, and the ISB, that's Chris, on Twitter. One of us will put out the call for questions, like the ones you're just about to hear for Layla and Kit. And look, I can't vouch for the quality of the questions that we got this week. I'm just going to ask them, and you can do whatever you like. Randall Trang on Twitter. Randall Trang on Twitter, our friend of the show, does have an important question about a very special day. He notes that we're recording this on 3/16, and he wants to know how everyone honored Stone Cold Steve Austin today.
What? Firstly, that was an amazing intro to this section. That was so funny. And then, secondly, I'm so sorry, but I don't know anything about Stone Cold Steve Austin. Is he a wrestler?
Well, how much time do you have? Matt and I will be happy to be your guides on this journey.
Go back and listen to the first few minutes of the show, and you'll hear about him.
Okay, kid, do you know who he is?
I am a graceless heathen.
Cool. Why do we have so much in common?
Well, just know that 316 is a special day, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Right, because you guys are into wrestling. He's a wrestler, isn't he? Oh,
yes,
right?
He is. He is.
Oh, yes. Okay.
All right.
He certainly is a wrestler.
So before I ask this question from Tales to Enrage, I'll just ask the both of you, are you playing the new Zelda game, and are you familiar with the new Zelda game?
Oh my god, Kit, are you a gamer? I can't remember.
No, but I've been seeing a lot of shark stuff on Twitter.
Wait, is that a thing in Zelda?
There's a shark. That's all I got.
Oh, okay, cool. That's more than I have.
All right. And then I will just let you know that Tales to Enrage on Twitter asked a question about Zelda. That's why I said I cannot vouch for these, because they're making assumptions.
I forgive you. I forgive you. And I'm sorry to let you guys down.
No.
Look, that's certainly not as bad as I thought it would be, given the intro.
It's their fault, not yours. And that's going to do it for our Twitter question segment.
Oh my god, that was so funny.
Layla Del Duca.
Okay, that could have been.
Yeah, Layla Del Duca and Kit Seaton, it has been an absolute pleasure and delight having you here on War Rocket Ajax. Could you please tell all our listeners where they can find you online if you wish to be found?
Yeah, Kit, go for it.
You can find me at Kit Seaton on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram as Kit and Cat Comics.
It's an adorable avatar, I must say. And then I can be found at Layla Del Duca for Twitter, and my name is spelled weird. It's LeilaDelDuca, and you can find me there at Twitter. And then I'm Layla Del Duck on Instagram, which is LeilaDelDuck, if that's not confusing at all. And then my email is also LeilaDelDuca@gmail.com. Yeah, but thank you so much for having us on the show. You guys are always really fun to hang out with.
This was fun.
I'm so glad to have had you. Layla Del Duca, Kit Seaton. The book is called Afar. It is, is it out now? Did I miss this Christmas that is the release?
No, it's actually out on March 29th, so we have like two more weeks.
March 29th, absolutely grab it. It's so good and so worth reading. Thank you so much for joining us, and a joyous 316 to you.
Thank you. Happy 316 as well.
Also to you. Yes, thank you.
Thanks once again to Layla and Kit for joining us. Definitely go check out Afar from Image Comics and pick up all their other stuff too. It's very, very good stuff.
It sure is. Now, Chris, is the time in the show where we answer a question from one of our listeners. Someone goes to a Tumblr and asks us a question. This one is from Anonymous, who has a question that's right up your alley, Chris.
Wait, are you talking about the person who wrote Go Ask Alice?
You got it.
Okay.
The person who wrote about going to a freak wharf?
That's them.
Here's...
What if we just assume that all anonymous, like everyone who is anonymous on the internet, is actually the writer of Go Ask Alice?
I mean, they share a name. Here's your question, Chris. And this one's, as I said, right up your alley. It's you're going to have to answer this one.
Okay.
They say, I've been going through the best of the 90s and 2000s Wildstorm stuff and loving it.
Hell yes.
But I have no idea what Gen 13 runs are worth reading.
All right. I'm here to help.
What are some recommendations?
Mainly, you've got your first run, the Brandon Choi, J. Scott Campbell run. Campbell's only on that book. Like, even though I consider it to be a defining work of his career, he's only on that book for, like, a year. And then I think it's maybe, like, Al Rio takes over, somebody like that. But I would say read that for a little while. It stays pretty fun. Until you start getting into, like, the John Arcudi, Gary Frank stuff, that stuff's not really my speed. It actually might be worth revisiting, but I remember I've never been like a huge fan of it. Then you just gotta skip to that Adam Warren, because that Adam Warren stuff is the good stuff. If you like, not just the miniseries, like Matt, we talked about Magical Drama Queen Roxy and Grunge the Movie previously,
right?
But Adam Warren actually does a run that he draws, I think, the first arc of, and then like Ed Bennis draws the rest of it, and it's really weird because you get to see Ed Bennis dealing with a lot of the kind of themes and ideas that would then resurface in Empowered. But that Gen 13 run has some really, really clever stuff. It has a story about Caitlin and Ivana Baiul and how Caitlin owes her a favor. So, like, whenever, like Ivana calls in the favor and Caitlin has to go on a mission for her. And then I'll just go ahead and spoil the twist. At the end of it, it is revealed that at the end of every mission, Ivana, like, wipes Caitlin's mind so that she can always call in this favor. So this is, like, the fourth or fifth, like, mission that she's done that is just, like, horrible Black Ops stuff. And it's, like, the issue itself is, like, really heartbreaking, but it's, like, a really clever idea. If you like Empowered at all, you will likely get a kick out of what Warren did with Gen 13 on the ongoing series. And that's kind of it, honestly. Like, that's, there was that, relaunch that I think Gail Simone did shortly, like, I want to say, like, 2008 or 9, and it's got some good ideas. If you're a Gail Simone completist, I would say check it out. But honestly, I see this as as you know, Matt, like, I'm a big fan of Gail stuff. I think her better work at the time was in Birds of Prey, and I think it's, you can see those themes done better in other books. But yeah, like, definitely get that first run because it's goofy fun, and then that Adam Warren run is goofy fun that's also really, really smart, and it, like, is happening at the same time as Sleeper, which I think is hilarious. But yeah, get that Gen 13, get that good stuff, get those good comics.
If I'm not mistaken, that Gail Simone Gen 13 run was around the same time as Grant Morrison writing, like, two issues of The Authority, and then that just stopping.
Yeah, like, and there was a Wildcats run in there, too. Like, and one of those, I think, ended up being completed by Keith Giffen. But all of them were kind of, like, weird non-starters. Like, I think the Gail Simone stuff was only a six-issue series, maybe? Either, I think it was Authority that Giffen ended up finishing, and Wildcats, there was just one issue, and the rest of it never happened.
Yeah, that was a weird period for Wildstorm. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you, Anonymous, for sending in that question. Go Ask Alice is a weird book. If you would like to send us a listener question, you could do so by going to warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. And hitting that ask box. You can also send us questions at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com, which is our email address. That is where you can send every story ever list, panel president lists. If you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know there. Or if you just want to send us a comment that you would like me to read, because I read the emails. You can,
hey, Matt, I need to correct myself real quick. That Gen 13 book ran for 39 issues.
Okay, there we go. Check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. And now is the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net, and you will find links to all my stuff. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find my stuff by going to the-isb.com. That's B as in Batman. It's actually B as in blog, if you want to get really technical about it. And that'll have links to the podcasts that I do, like this one, like Movie Fighters, like Sailor Business and Xena Warrior Business. It'll have links to the columns I write at Comics Alliance, and it'll have links to the comics that I write. The Guardians of the Galaxy Monsters Unleashed one-shot is available in your local store right now. Chad and I wrote that one. It's got amazing art. It's really, really fun. Deadpool Bad Blood is available for pre-order, so jump on that. It's out on May 17th. Also, I'm going to be this weekend in Greenville, South Carolina for SC Comic Con, along with Chad and a bunch of other really great people. And then next weekend at the Sumter Comic Art Symposium in Sumter, South Carolina. So if you're in South Carolina, that's the upstate and the Midlands. I'm not going to the beach, but you can come find me in Greenville or Sumter. And I think that's it as far as what I've got coming up in the immediate future. Don't forget to back Matt's Kickstarter for Everything Will Be Okay, so that everything will be okay when you're reading a good comic.
That's right, and now we've reached the part of the show that we have started doing where we tell you guys about a good cause that you can go contribute to. That's something new that we've been doing in 2017. And Chris, I'm gonna pick up the baton on this one and say that maybe it's worth going and donating to Meals on Wheels America. That is an organization that brings meals to folks who otherwise wouldn't be able to leave their homes and go get food. They a lot of them are homebound. Many of them are elderly. Some of them are just unable to leave their home. And Meals on Wheels not only provides them with sustenance, it also gives them someone to talk to when a lot of times, those people are homebound and spend a lot of their days alone. It gives them, a little bit of camaraderie and companionship. It is something that is very important to a lot of people's lives. As you may have heard, funding for that organization is being threatened very, very deeply. But you can donate to them. Personal donations to Meals on Wheels are something that you can do. So you can go check them out at mealsonwheelsamerica.org and click that donate button and help them out a little bit, knowing that any funding that they get from government sources is in peril, and a lot of people depend on that organization for. Not just food, but for other things as well, to make their life better. So if you can go help them out, please do.
Yeah, and like you said, Matt, it's not just meals, although that's a huge part of it. It's a person to talk to. It's a person to check on you and make sure you're okay, just by knocking on the door and making sure you come to the door. It's something that is very valuable and does a lot of good. And we need things like that in this world. So definitely check out Meals on Wheels. And if you can, throw a few bucks their way.
And Chris, that does it for this week's episode of War Rocket Ajax. Once again, HQC. High quality content.
Now, Matt, does that replace the S rank? Or is that it? Is that in addition to? Are those concurrent?
Yeah, we'll just call it additive. We'll say it's all up in there.
So we're talking about S-Rank HQC.
That's right.
All right, good. I'm glad to have it. Have a great week, everybody. We'll be back next Monday with another episode of War Rocket Ajax.
We love you.
Yeah!
Every breeze.